And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from Wine Box podcast. This is episode 116, Spotlight on DC Comics, Villains Month, part one. I am Chris Mosby.
I'm Caleb Gerard.
And I am Murray Fox.
Yes, we have full staff today. Everybody's back from their various things, and as we talked about, we'll be talking about, instead in the title, we'll be talking about Villains Month this month, kind of going through them, talk about whether we liked them or not, and, you know, if they were worth reading, if you haven't read them already. Eventually, they'll go on sale on Comixology. There's actually... I know I had personally said that I was going to boycott this entire month, and technically, I still have, through the... kindness of strangers, I've been able to read a good amount of these and still working on them. But anyway, so we're going to go over.
I have yet to see in person any of the 3D covers, just to put that out there.
Yeah, all I've seen is pictures of the melted ones. I don't even think I've seen pictures of the actual 3D covers.
Oh my goodness, I've actually got some of the 3D covers.
Really? Are they worth the extra dollar?
Sometimes,
yeah. Because some of the art's pretty good, I have to admit.
The covers are kind of cool. Like, they're pretty cool, actually. Now, you know, like for a one-off thing, I didn't mind paying an extra buck for some of the stories.
Yeah.
Because they're cool. The covers are cool.
Yeah.
Which ones did you get?
Any ones I would have normally gotten. So the Flash ones I got. Mm-hmm. The Aquaman ones I got. A couple of the good. Justice League. That's probably about it. Earth 2, what was that? Yeah, I got those. I liked.
Huh? Oh, you guys talked at the same time. I didn't catch that.
Sorry, my bad. Go ahead.
All right.
So my recollection of the 3D covers is that the background, like for the Aquaman ones, for instance, both of them, there was a Black Manta and an Ocean Master, and that the background was identical, but that the foreground, the villain, was a new picture. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm looking at
definitely that way on the Flash.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at some of them. Just picking some at random here. It seems
So when it says that the cover, for instance, on the three Flash ones was Francis Manapul, did he draw Grodd and Reverse Flash and the Rogues for the foreground for the 3D effect?
I think so.
Okay. Alright. Just I'm kinda curious how it worked out. Again, I haven't seen any of them in person. I lack an LCS that I can rely on that I want to actually go to. So
yeah, I know what that's like.
You'll see them all in the 50-cent bins before.
Oh, I'm sure.
They'll be filed right behind all the Flashpoint fill-ins.
And the Civil War stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's see. Who wants to start first?
How are we doing that? We're doing this chronological, alphabetical?
We're doing it alphabetical.
Randomly? Okay.
That's how my notes are.
If we're going to talk about the Action Comics ones, I only read one of the three, so...
And how do you want to do it then?
Well, no, that's fine. If you guys want to, I mean, I didn't read the Cyborg one, I didn't read the General Zod one, and I did not read the Metallo, but I did, in fact, read Lex Luthor.
Okay, so. Then which ones did you read, Murray?
I don't think I read the Lex Luthor, but I think I read or tried to read the others.
Okay, well, I definitely read all four of those, so I'll just start off then.
Now, I am kicking myself now that I'm looking at it. I am going to go back and I'm going to get the Metallo one because it's Solly Fish.
Yeah.
But other than that, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I wasn't going to read any of these. And, you know, when I got access to them, I was like, well, I'll give them a shot, see what. And there are some that are actually good. There's some that are just eh. And there's some of them that are complete and total mess of nonsensical crap.
Yep.
To put it lightly.
So if
you want to skip over one because you want to read it for yourself first, then say so. Then we'll do that.
There's spoilers.
Yeah, we're gonna spoil these. These have been out for at least a month, and you know, if you were waiting for the big omnibus, then yeah, we're gonna spoil some of these. But and only if so far, there's only been a handful that have actually had anything to do with the Forever Evil. A lot of them take place during the first issue.
Well, for instance, like the Lex Luthor one tied pretty tightly into the Forever Evil fan from
that one did. It like goes right into, you know, we did last episode, we talked about Forever Evil number one. It goes right into the very first couple panels. It's like the day before Forever Evil hits, the day in the life of Lex Luthor. I guess we're talking about that one now.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that, I mean, it's on that one it was Charles Soule, and I don't know who this Bermudez person is who did the art, but it was pretty sweet, actually.
I actually enjoyed that.
I'm disappointed. I would like to have seen the Luther character keep the scar that he got, that we never found out exactly how that happened.
Yeah. That might have happened in Morrison's Action Comics run.
I don't recall it happening.
I don't either, though.
He was in prison and he had a scar on his face, and then and now he's had plastic surgery and he's back to being a pretty boy bald guy.
Yeah, and he's even more ruthless, if the same, if not more ruthless as he was in the previous incarnation. Because except for Action Comics, this is the most we've seen of him in the New 52, I think, right?
I think so. He hasn't been in Superman, has he? I don't think so.
As far as I know, no. And this is Action Comics number 23.3 that we're talking about as well.
He featured fairly prominent in the Hell on Earth storyline that ran through the Superbooks, other than Action.
I read those and I don't remember that.
There was that whole thing where Superman was going to him for advice, and he and Superboy had to break into the prison that he had built for himself.
That's right. I remember that vaguely.
And that's where we got to see that he had the scar on his face, which is where I was confused when that happened. But apparently that happened. I'm going to guess that happened off panel.
Yeah. They've been doing that. They're still kind of keeping that 5 years before – that 5 years that everybody was around kind of fluid, I think. So they don't.
But specific to this issue, I like the fact that it tied very directly into Forever Evil, and I also like that we got a lot of insight into this Lex Luthor. I mean, he's always been a ruthless guy, but he's calm. He's an amalgam of a lot of the previous Lex Luthor. He's a super genius. He's clearly very rich.
Good in the business end.
He's a lot like the Lex Luthor from the Adventures of Superman cartoon.
I got that. Yeah,
that would be the closest of the previous incarnations of Luthor that I would put him at.
But my favorite thing is that through it, he kept like wondering where Superman was, and he's like the very first, you know, second or third page, he's like, I know he would be here. He's obsessed with me, and it's obviously the other way around. So.
That whole thing about him crashing the
space
shuttle.
Oh wow. Just to get to see if they would come out, and then he never planned to save them, and yeah, it's something.
The one thing it did lack, though, and it's something that they keep bringing up in Forever Evil, is there are other heroes that have that are available, and this did not present any of those heroes.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were too busy doing what they were doing.
Yeah. Okay,
I don't know. Sure. But that might be somewhat of a hole, but anyway. It is something else. That guy, he is something else, that's for sure. He's going to end up being one of the anti-heroes in it, because as I've read it, not everybody's falling in line. Two-Face, isn't Black Manta from the Aquaman one? Yeah, he's not. I mean, he started out being in line, but that was a good one too, by the way.
The rogues. But you know what's interesting about the Luthor thing, the Luthor involvement, is that if you recall your Earth 3 trivia,
right,
Luthor was the opposite, or was the good guy on Earth 3.
Yeah, Alexander Luthor, yeah.
And I think it's interesting that they're making Luthor about to be the leader of the resistance.
Yeah. Take not Alexander Luthor,
Alex Luthor.
Yeah, Alex Luthor, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
Anyhow, that's the only one I read. I don't know about you guys, but
no, I read the others. Cyborg Superman. That one was pretty good. Let's see, that was done by, what's that guy's name? Full name here. I'll get to it. But yeah, it starts off on Argo.
Yeah.
And this is a complete reimagining of the Cyborg Superman character.
So Argo as in Supergirl Argo?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Which he helped, you know, bring, he kept him alive for a little bit longer. And according to this, it was 9 months after this first scene, and you see Brainiac there. But it kind of goes through, and it shows, you know, Jor-El and his brother Zor arguing about how, you know, they both know that Krypton's going to die, and they're trying to figure out ways to do it. Well, we all know what Jor-El did. Well, Zor-El, he was going to try to use some Brainiac technology that got left over the last time when he stole Kandor, and use that to save the Earth, or save Krypton. So, it starts out, basically, in a nutshell, he ends up calling Brainiac at the end. And he comes, destroys Argo City, but he's still alive, so he basically turns him into a cyborg and wipes his memory. But
Zor-El is a cyborg?
Yes. Superman? Yes.
Oh.
And he considered Jor-El the greatest mind on the planet. And Zor-El himself a highly inferior intellect, so he dressed him up with the House of El symbol, but made him look like Jor-El. So that ends up making him look like Superman, which I don't think, since this is 9 months after the destruction of Krypton, he's never seen Superman before. It's just I think they've already established that battle suit that Superman wears is a, you know, a normal attire for the House of El, so that's why he looks so much like Superman. So yeah, that was an interesting little twist, and they show back and forth him, you know, going back and forth from the past when he's trying to use his Brainiac technology to the Cyborg Superman, and Brainiac made him go look for other survivors, perfect survivors like himself. So there's a lot of gratuitous him killing random people on random planets to try to see if any of them are strong enough. And then they have a flashback, and then, you know, it's back to killing people again. So the first part of it I like because it's a new twist. They actually changed it a little bit, and it kind of shows you know, Zor-El a little bit. So anyway, that's why I liked it for that, the him going around and killing people on all those different planets, and I could have done without that, but it made a good framework.
So. I have to say, I had a predisposition against this particular issue, not because of the creative team, but because of the Superman that came out of the resurrection of Superman back in the day.
Yeah.
The Cyborg Superman was the most boring of them all.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I didn't like it either, and that's why I kind of wanted to see what the deal was, if they're going to bring that Hank Henshaw back, and it's a completely different deal. So, I thought it was interesting because of that.
Yeah, I was bored.
Now,
I could barely get through the issue, and if they had, I don't know, thrown some Supergirl in there, maybe I would have been interested, but...
Well, she wasn't Supergirl yet, but she was in there.
No, but I mean, I don't know. I had trouble with any of the issues that were just completely villain-focused, because sometimes they're kind of boring. I don't know. Like, you need
A lot of these are just plain origin stories that don't fit into the current goings-on with villains, with, you know, Forever Evil and whatever. That one was one, and this General Zod one is another one.
That was another one that bored me to tears.
Well, this one, it wasn't... I don't think they ever went back and did all the way through the childhood, all the way up of Zod or not. But it was kind of interesting. His parents were scientists, and they were on this planet, and the monsters on the... Well, they were on this island on Krypton, and the...
Now, this is the Zod one that you're talking about now?
Yeah,
Okay.
So Zod lived in the wilderness by himself for a year until he was brought back by Zor-El, and then he ends up being in the military, yada, yada, yada. And basically, kind of spoil... Well, so you see him and his two compatriots, which, as you know, the big brute look and the chick, right?
Right.
Basically, he decides that the Kryptonians are complacent, and he wants to go back to the time when they were fighting this alien race, I guess, to attack the planet. So he uses Zor-El's technology, when that alien race was called the Char. Now, they made it not look like this in this one, but later on, one of the Superman ones, and it's actually Superman and Batman number 3.1 where they do this, is... Well, basically, this character, you know, he makes a Char hybrid attack, basically. He designs it and then sets it free so he could be seen saving people again and get everybody back into the fray. So they end up attacking the Char homeworld for no reason, and then Jor-El later on finds out that that's what happened, and that's why they get sent to the... Phantom Zone.
Well, that's very convoluted.
Yeah, it is. It is. So,
but it does not tie in any way into
no.
Forever Evil.
No. Okay. Now I'd read some of the Superman ones, though. He does show up in one involving. Well, the Batman Superman one involves. It shows a little bit farther along when. Zor-El sends Kara off to Earth, and he's like been working on inside the Phantom Zone, and he's actually talking to her through the Phantom Zone. He's like got the portal open, you know, the portal open enough to actually talk to people, and he's working on it slowly. So that's what they're building up to, is he's going to bust out of the Phantom Zone. Well, it's in that issue that you find out that's where that Char that they show that he created, that he got them to do whatever, you know, it did to, you know, turn the public around, was actually Doomsday.
So he's Skyping with her. Okay, got it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he is Skyping her, yeah.
Skyping from the Zone.
So the very last page of this General Zod thing, it shows him in there with a bunch of, you know, and they're watching Superman, of course. So, it was kind of interesting. A little bit farther into that. The Lex Luthor one, we talked about that one.
But Murray, you're saying that the Zod one as well as the Cyborg Superman one bored you, right? Is that...
Yeah, you know what? I have never, ever, ever liked Zod. Ever. In the movies, he bores me. In the comics, he bores me. He's just... He's boring, and Ursa and Non and like gross.
They even changed Ursa's name, I think.
Yeah.
Now the Metallo one, yeah, it kind of bored me too, because, you know, basically it starts with the after the last time Superman beat Metallo, he's like in a coma until they put the kryptonite in him, and then he's awake, and it just shows all the crap that happened that made him a villain again.
Now, Metallo was mentioned in Forever Evil number 2.
Yeah, he's actually in there in the background listening to them, the Crime Syndicate, talk.
Because he has kryptonite, which is something that Ultraman is indeed up.
I'm sure that will eventually happen.
Oh, yeah, Ultraman's going to eat Metallo.
But basically, they brought him back to life with the kryptonite, and he they'd send him on missions, and he didn't give a shit who was there. He'd like kill whole villages just to get the job done, and they eventually decided he was too big of a threat and try to kill him. He ends up on the bottom of the ocean, and he's been walking all this time to Earth. And
so he's like the one that was in, again, flashing back to the cartoon.
Yeah, pretty much is what I did to it, yeah.
Because he was a soldier in that, and he was then deposited in a volcano, but same difference.
It's the same deal.
Yeah.
And he ends
up. I don't think I read this one. It's not sounded familiar to me at all.
Yeah, so he has to get away. Now he's a bad guy now, he realizes. And so he ends up seeing Scarecrow, and he gives him one of the coins, and that's the last page.
And this is the same guy who was in the Action Comic Books run, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's the same guy, the Corbin.
Okay,
they even named it the same, James Corbin.
Okay, all right, because I remember that was one of the early storylines in Morrison's.
Yeah. He had a thing for Lois and the whole bit, and it was like General Lane's golden boy, and he basically got turned on, and so yeah, he's a bad guy. So
turned on, all right.
Yeah. So that's basically the same.
I think he got taken out by Steel, actually, the first appearance.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's how it ended.
Woohoo! Look at me.
Yeah.
I remember stuff.
All right. On to Aquaman 23.1. You want to do that one, Murray? Kind of give us a synopsis?
Sure. Who was the villain? Let me check.
Black Manta. I've got the issue up if you don't.
That one was... Oh, I think that one was a waste.
You think so?
Time. Half of it was... like straight from Forever Evil number one.
Yeah, some of it is.
Yeah, like 20 pages. No, sorry, 10 pages.
Well, Jeff Johns did write part of it. This was by plot by Jeff Johns and Tony Bedard, words by Tony Bedard, Claude St. Aubin, and pencils and inks.
Yeah, it looked nice. Like it was a good looking book. It just didn't.
Greg Pak wrote the General Zod one, so that's like a Marvel crossover right there.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I like parts of it. I like the way that they turned Black Manta against the crime syndicate. I like that he was. I like that they kind of explored what was driving him. Like, he wanted to get back at Aquaman. He wanted revenge, and if Aquaman's no longer around, then Batman, he's able to push it aside. He's like able to go, okay, I don't gotta get after Aquaman anymore. My life's, I can move on.
Mm-hmm.
Until the crime syndicate does whatever it is they do. What do they do? Flood his town or something?
It happens. The Ultraman moves the moon. And that causes a bunch of tides and ends up flooding his hometown. And it wasn't because the town was flooded. It was because it washed away the grave of his father. He was there saying it was over because Aquaman was dead and he had the trident with him. And that's what happened. They wiped his father's grave away. And, he was there mourning his father. And he survived the flood. And, so he's going to go after him.
Yeah, that I liked. But it was such a quick read. It was like...
Yeah, it was kind of quick.
Super quick.
Because it starts out, Amanda Waller's trying to recruit him into the Suicide Squad, and that's two panels over, that's when they hit Belle Reve. So he, Ultraman sees what he's done, and it's like, I hadn't considered that. It's like, so what? And, I think Black Manta was there close enough to do that. Some of Amanda Waller's words come back to him. What are you going to do with all that hate? And at the last page, it says Black Man is War Against the Crime Syndicate unfolds in Forever Evil, and he's holding Aquaman's trident. So it was kind of interesting. So, let's see, what do we got next?
I think if we, go ahead. Sorry.
No.
Or I was going to say with the Ocean Master issue next.
Yeah.
What happened to the Ocean Master?
Basically, it shows a little bit before the Atlantis War, and then it goes to, hey, guess what? He's in Bellerive talking to his lawyer, and I thought it was kind of interesting, the guard helping him with water and everything. But anyway, same thing, villains attack. He just kind of goes, gets his outfit.
Oh, was this the one where he goes off and then he goes and rescues the chick?
At the end, the little girl at the end. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, instead of helping the guy that helped him, he just, you know, basically does euthanasia so he won't suffer.
Yes.
I thought that was an interesting twist. Shows him a lot of, there's a lot of walking. He's walking towards the ocean, you know, a lot of walking. Yes. He kills a couple of bad guys that are trying to hurt these other people, mostly just because of the way they talk to him. He's one of those, you know, do not unhand me, you fool, kind of thing. And he doesn't help the woman in the after the robbery, but he's around when criminals attacked her babysitter and her little boy, and they're planning on doing nasty things to the women. And as he walks in the water, he hears it. He leaves anyway, and then he jumps out and says, eight. That's way too young. Eight is too young.
That's the end of it, though. We don't actually see him doing anything.
And it says not the end, so I don't know. I guess in the pages of Aquaman, I have no idea.
I would be surprised, because Aquaman is telling a... I was going to say completely different. It's not that he couldn't make an appearance there, because... I mean, Johns is wrapping up his run, so I would expect to see Manta and Ocean Master there, but it's the story they're telling is definitely not a Forever Evil type of story. It's a different story altogether. So
it was done by Johns and Sterling Gates too, I believe.
Number 24 did not in fact address this in any shape or form.
Yeah, so. I didn't read it, so I don't know.
I did, and it's I'm popular. Sorry.
Okay.
No, it had nothing to do with the Forever Evil thing. It's still dealing with the story that you were talking about.
Yeah, the history of Atlantis, the backstory there, and it's a good. I'm liking it. I'm liking it a lot. But if we see Ocean Master show up there, I think it'll be for a different purpose altogether.
Okay. Fair enough. I haven't been reading that, so. You guys would know better than me.
Because now that the artist has moved over to Justice League, mm-hmm. John's been using words to fill the page.
Well, maybe I think I bought some of those back issues when they were cheap. Maybe I'll read up on them again.
Seriously, like you'll get through the first 12 in like an hour, and then the next 12 take a little bit longer. He's been he's got story going on in there. Like,
wow. Multiple issues.
Dialogue.
Let's see. Next up, Batman number 23.1, which is the Joker one. And this is one of the ones I consider complete and total utter crap. That made no sense. Andy Kubert wrote it. Andy Clark is the art, which Andy Clark's art's not bad, but I don't know. You talk about boring. It's bored me. Some kind of story about him taking in a baby ape or gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
And making it a sidekick. And it's just ridiculously gruesome and makes no sense at all. It's supposed to be, you know, back when he was. It's in the past, I gathered. You think it even says that on one of these pages. That it took was like takes place before, several years ago, the Gotham City Zoo. So it's, you know, it has nothing to do with it.
So this was post year zero, but pre reboot time or New 52 time. So,
yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I thought it was stupid. I really did.
I was not a fan of it either. I didn't see where he was going with it, so.
No, I think they had to do something in it. Yeah.
They had to do something?
I don't know. And I'm looking at the last page again, and it's like, to be continued with a question mark. Pick up current issues of Batman to find out. It's like that gorilla's going to show up again. So, I don't know. That was dumb.
But on the flip side, Batman 23.2,
yeah.
The Riddler issue, wow.
That was really good. I enjoyed that.
That was awesome stuff.
Who did that? Yeah, that was Snyder and Fox, right? Scott Snyder, right? Ray Fox, and Jeremy Hahn, which is a Joplin, Missouri native. Yes, it's just like 20 minutes from here. He's good. I'd like to get him on the show sometime, actually.
You know where to find him.
Yeah, I do, actually. And on Facebook. I'm one of his Facebook friends.
This was like Die Hard to me, in a way.
Yeah, it was.
Did you read this one, Murray?
I think I should have. It
ties into the Batman Year Zero, and it's a very interesting story.
It ties into Batman Year Zero, and unlike some of the other ones, it actually ties into Forever Evil as well.
Yeah, it's happening. It's actually happening during when all everything goes to hell.
But it's in continuity with both the regular monthly and this big mm-hmm. crossover event, which is not an easy feat, and Snyder pulls it off incredibly well with this whole story about mm-hmm. and, you know, Edward Nygma revisiting his old job, which was at the Wayne Towers, and going to get something, and we don't know what it is. He's going back. Basically, he's going back to his old office at Wayne Towers, where he used to work for Bruce Wayne. And
he worked for his uncle.
Right. Okay, you're right. Of course, it was when Bruce Wayne was quote unquote dead. And missing, but mm-hmm. so yeah, he's going back, and he knows the whole security of the building. He's just going from ground floor up to, you know, basically the penthouse, floor to floor, trying to, you know, and manipulating people as they go, making them think like they're trying to stop him. He's actually using them to move forward through the building, up and up and up. Goddamn, just Scott Snyder, he just continues to blow me away.
Yeah, he does.
Batman. A character I couldn't give two poops about prior to. Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, he does all this just to get back in his old office to just sit there and wait for Batman to show up, because Batman is the only one that's ever come close to a worthy adversary for him. That's the whole gist of it.
Yep.
So he just climbs up on the roof and just sits there and starts playing solitaire. He says, they say Batman's dead. I doubt it. He says, I imagine I'll be seeing him again. And to be honest, I'm just killing time until I do. Because that's it. And he's, you know. And it says to be continuing in Batman Year Zero year, number 25, which should be good. Story by Scott Snyder and Ray Fox, and written by Ray Fox, artist Jeremy Hahn, yeah.
And so Fox is his, I think he, what, isn't he like a former student of Snyder or something like that?
I don't know. That's that Tinian guy you might be thinking of.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Does talent.
Ray Fox is a good Canadian boy.
I've heard of him before. I just can't place anything off the top of my head that he's written.
He's a Maple Leaf. Okay, got it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Now here's another little gem. Batman 23.3. Now, if you guys liked the Batman, the Penguin Limited series they did, they basically retold his origin. This is more of the same. He's a mean son of a bitch. Now, Frank Thierry wrote it. Now, that sounds familiar.
He did a lot of stuff for the X Office a while ago. And
yeah. So this has gone on, going on during Forever Evil 1, in between or somewhere. And you read some of the other ones, the Batman and Robins and the Dark Knight ones and all those others. So at some point in time, he got all the big wigs, villains, and said, hey, let's all quit fighting. He split up all the different parts of Gotham, kind of like No Man's Land. And he said, well, I'm the mayor, and here's your parcel and, you know, whatever. So Scarecrow, Killer Croc, Two-Face, and I don't know who else.
Poison Ivy, Ventriloquist.
Yes, Ventriloquist and Poison Ivy. They all have sections of the city. And that's going to go into the Arkham War, Forever Evil Arkham War, which I read the first issue of that, and it's by Tomasi. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have. And but, yeah, it's good so far. But anyway, this is him. Somebody's threatening him because of the Emperor Penguin thing, which happened in the Dark Knight, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I think you read that, so yeah. Some punks are trying to cheat him out of money, and he takes them outside and basically kills them all, kicks their ass single-handedly. I was very impressed.
Yeah, they were in his casino, and they were winning, or they were even cheating, I think.
Yeah, they were cheating, that's the thing.
And he gave them an opportunity to do right, and they didn't, because they got all, hey, you're this wimpy little pudgy guy with a funny face, and so he, you know, he killed them. Real good.
Yeah. Then you see the mayor of whatever state that Gotham is in. No, not the mayor, the governor. You know, shows up and he's saying, hey, I'm going to close this down because, you know, they find the dead bodies out in front of the police station. And actually, this might be before, because why would they be walking around on television if it was during? I missed that.
This is where he sets him up totally, where he's like,
yeah.
The pictures. Hey, I don't know what you were doing. What happened? Are you okay?
Yeah, because, well, you find out that the governor is actually his friend from when he was a kid. He protected him from the bullies. And he's been helping him. Well, he changes his mind, and he's going to clean him up. Well, next thing you know, he wakes up from being passed out, and his secretary is dead without her head. And he's, like, naked. And they apparently drugged him with venom because they've got film of him raging all harked up.
A pervert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's something else. And, you know, planted text messages on his phone that they've been having an affair and the whole bit, and pretty much says, hey, you know, you're going to forget all this or else. So the best part of it is at the end, there's going to be press conference. The governor shows up at Gotham City, and he stands at the podium. He pulls a gun to his head, and he says, sometimes the bullies get it right. And then he puts a gun to his head and blows his brains out on television. And I'm like, whoa.
Only in Gotham.
Yeah, it was something. So then you see, because he took out a yearbook and was telling his Chippy, I think her name's Lark, about him being his buddy, and he was looking through a yearbook. Well, and he's got another copy apparently, and it's got all the pictures of the bullies, and by them is, you know, you see a picture of a bully, next to it is suicide or accident, another bully, a picture from the newspaper, mugging turns fatal, next one, bully, another picture, asleep at the wheel. So he's accidents have happened to all the bullies of his youth. So,
and we got a lot of that from the in the Pain and Prejudice miniseries,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's not generally a direct person, yeah, usually indirectly taking out his adversaries. Yeah. So he's willing to, as we see in this issue, he's more than willing to go toe to toe with whoever he's going to take out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when he kills somebody, he usually kills their family too. Because after he killed those guys that were cheating him, he asked the person to come out and checked. He said, "Do they have families?" And the person said yes, and he says, well, not anymore. Have him taken care of. So, I mean, you know, it's bad news. So that was one of the better ones, I thought. And let's see. Batman 23.4. How long? Man, we've already been talking 45 minutes.
Yeah, we'll get our ways through the Batmans.
Yeah. So the Batman...
I think tagging this with a part one was a smart move.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the ones you that are actually Foxy. the ones that are actually interesting, I wanted to talk about. But anyway,
this one I didn't read. So,
well, apparently, you know, because Bane had been dead at one point, and they brought him back during Infinite Crisis. He just like showed up, and he's been talked about, and I know that they've said in the past that everything that happened before happened. Well, he did break Batman's back at one time in this new universe. But apparently, he went back to Santa Prisca, which was the country he was from, where he grew up in prison. They changed the origin a little bit. So anyway, he's basically in charge of the entire country. And yeah, he's freaky. There's some.
We basically grew up Freddy Krueger style. I mean, he was the son of a thousand.
Yeah. See, in the original, his mother was pregnant with him, and she had to live in prison, and he was born. So he grew up in prison because in that country, if your father cannot do the time, then the child has to. And that's why he was in prison. So he literally grew up in prison. That part they've kind of kept, but they didn't mention it in it. And he spent most of his time in solitary. And he, you know, slowly, you know, grew up to that. And one of the things they had done in there is back when Secret Six was going on is Bane got off the Venom. You know, he thought it was a weakness. He was onto it, you know, whatever. But apparently, while he's been at this prison back in Santa Prisca, he has modified it. And made it where he's given it to just about everybody, all of his minions. And they're going back to take Gotham City because he says it's his.
He's going to take over Gotham City?
So that basically, you know, you see some stuff from Belle Reve because he takes over Belle Reve first.
And this one review that I'm reading on about it, because I didn't read the actual issue, yeah, actually tells it pretty good, is that this actually leads directly into Forever Evil Arkham War.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have any interest in the Arkham War thing and you want to see how Bane enters into that story, this apparently is a good prequel to that. But
yeah.
I don't give two rats again about Bane. I didn't like him at the time that he was introduced. I didn't like him in the latest movie very much.
They really strayed away from the origin. I didn't like how they showed him in the movie either. But this is closer to the original Bane. And I read the first Forever Evil Arkham War because, like I said before, it was by Peter Tomasi, and he's done such a good job on Batman and Robin. I really enjoyed that first issue. So...
Now, I take it from your silence, Murray, that none of these made it to your read pile. Is that?
Yeah, I don't think I did read many of the Batman ones. I read the Joker, didn't like it. I read Riddler. I somehow missed Penguin and Bane. I think I read more of the Batman and Robin ones.
Yeah, I read a lot of those. Some of those today. Just
holy
like,
smokes. You know. Look at all the Batman. 4, 8.
Oh, I know. There's a shitload of them.
Wait.
Well, I mean, not all of them are good. The Joker's Daughter one, Batman the Dark Knight number 23.4, that was crap. And Ascenti. I thought it was. Did you read that one?
I did. No, I stayed away from that one.
Yeah.
I like the Joker's Daughter.
Oh, the Ventriloquist one. That was done by Simone. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, no, the Joker's Daughter one was crap.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute utter...
So we can at least get those out of the way. I thought even though the Gail Simone wrote it, I thought the Ventriloquist one was made no sense either. But but it's pretty much a whole brand new ventriloquist.
Yeah, use the ventriloquist in Batgirl.
Okay. Is that right?
Yeah, I haven't read Batgirl in a while.
So this is essentially the Batgirl 23.1 would be a fair way of putting it, right?
Yeah, I would say.
Yep.
Let's see, Batman: The Dark Knight.
It's like the whole thing though. It tied directly into Forever Evil.
Yeah, it did.
And it showed how vicious this character could be. I mean, she literally takes out a room full of innocent people.
It's pretty vicious.
And
let's see.
This is the kind of story that Gail Simone nailed on Secret Six and all the spinoffs from that.
You're right.
This is the stuff. This is the type of story that makes me a fan of her writing. I still cannot get into Batgirl right now, and the movement is so pretentious and self-righteous, it's unbelievable. But
I haven't read that yet.
This particular story was really it's a stupid word to use for it. It's such a vicious story, but it was fun.
You liked the ventriloquist one? Is that what you're saying?
I did.
It just didn't make any sense to me what they were trying to prove. But
she's a kookaburra.
Yeah, that's true. That's another origin one. All of them kind of hinted on origin. Some of them were complete origins. Others were just did it in flashbacks.
She did it exactly right. She tied it into the event. She tied it into the stuff that's going on in Gotham, tied to the event. Mm-hmm. And into the monthly, apparently. I guess you're saying that she's a regular, or she's a villain for Batgirl. So
just in there.
So, I mean, again, just like Snyder did with the Riddler one.
Yeah.
And they did on the Penguin issue. This was a good use of the event.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Batman: The Dark Knight 23.2. That one, they kind of redid the Mr. Freeze's origin a little bit. Didn't really make much sense to me. Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. What did you think of it? Or did you read it?
I think I liked other versions of the origin better, so I had a hard time.
It was kind of convoluted.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough when you're starting over because you want to keep things new and fresh, but when you've hit on a really cool origin story originally, mm-hmm. like his pre-New 52 origin was pretty good, so it's hard to top that. And I don't know. I would have just made this a plain old regular Mr. Freeze story.
Yeah, I would have too. I would be surprised if they made him change it, you know, editorial. But anyway.
Didn't they just do his origin like earlier this year?
In one of the annuals.
Did they? Yeah, that they got. Then they must have expanded on it or retold some of it because they talk about that annual. They actually had an editor's note saying this happened in Batman Annual number 1, which I don't think I read.
Well, that was the one where he's an employee of Bruce Wayne, and I got that right this time, by the way. And he's obsessed with this woman who he says is his wife, but actually turns out is not his wife, unlike in the past origin, which was very cool, where he was actually a very tragic villain.
Yeah, that's why I don't know why they needed to change that part.
In the new origin, he's just a stalker.
Right. Well, and then they add in some kind of, well, in this, they add in a thing about his mother. She was the original one that got frozen.
He's an Oedipus. Oh, that's right. She fell into the lake or something that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And he says, it's not the Oedipus. They say I have an Oedipus complex, but I have no sexual interest in my mother. He says, and that's the actual line in there. I just read that like an hour ago, so it's pretty fresh.
He says while wearing her underwear.
Yeah. Kind of weird. But, yeah, it's like a lot of going over his story, and I hadn't read that annual, so all that was new to me.
Now, he got a slice of Gotham as well, right?
Yes, he is one. See, they could have done – I would have been more interested in reading that stuff. So – but anyway.
Well, more to come in the Arkham War.
Yeah. So let's see, Batman: The Dark Knight. Am I still going alphabetical here?
You are.
Well, we skipped over Batman and Robin.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Okay, go back to that. I was looking at that page you sent, Caleb, and I just got off track.
My bad.
Because they all came out at the same time, didn't they? Yeah, the Two-Face one. Let's see. This happens during when everything's going to hell. Peter Tomasi, Jay Tomasi, artist I've never heard of, and see Scarecrow and him talking, and he was about to flip a coin to decide. No, this is when Two-Face is first invited into the society, because Scarecrow shows up with the coin. Trying to think what else.
And when you say the coin, this is the secret society or whatever.
Yeah, secret society coin, right.
They handed out this coin that's essentially a way for them to communicate with each other or be caged by the Superman and Superwoman and all them.
So it basically tells the story of what he does during everything going to hell, and he flips his coin and decides he's going to save Gotham, and he goes around pretty much shooting or zapping pretty much every criminal he comes across, and then puts them on trial, and he chooses what the heads and tails are. He saves some workers there that worked with him when he was DA, and there's some weird Batman villains that have been coming up in one of the books. It's like that have been maimed by Batman but are still alive. Like one of them's got Batman's footprint on his face. It's weird. And another one's got like a batarang stuck in his head, so his eyes are all googly.
And that wasn't Batman. That came up in, I want to say that was actually Dark Knight, but
might be. But anyway,
they were all people who felt like that Batman had wronged them, and I would say that they're right because they've got pieces of Batman's armor stuck in their bodies.
Yeah, one of them's some chick that's got like batarangs in her skin, and she can throw them flinging her arms. It's kind of weird. But anyway, he basically it's life or it's whatever. Like one guy that stole baby formula from a pregnant mother with three kids, he said life, imprisonment, or death, and he said heads, life. So you know. And then sometimes he just shot one of those, the one with the foot on his face, just shot him in the head after he failed his deal. One of the society mooks shows up and say, hey, we want Gotham this way, and he doesn't like being told. So, he's against odds with the society. And then he flips the coin again and decides he's going to make Gotham bleed. It's kind of interesting. Court of Owls one, Batman and Robin 23.2. That's somewhat interesting. It shows various parts of Gotham history. Starts off in 74 and shows these talents killing people at different times, or making them do what they want. And, but the thing at the end is, apparently they had a talent that he wasn't getting enough jobs to kill people, so he just started killing people, and they were calling him the Gotham Butcher, and they had to finally put him down.
You get this issue. I'm actually a little surprised they missed this one. This sounds interesting with the focus on the Court of Owls. I don't know how I missed it.
Yeah, it's written by that Tenyon guy, too. It's actually really good because an older Court of Owls member is talking to his daughter, and they decided to help get things. This is going to come into the Talon book. Apparently, the very first Talon was so bad they had to lock him up. They couldn't keep control of him. And now they're going to let him loose to get things back under their control.
Now, are either one of you reading Talon? I'm not.
No, you said it was good there at one time. I thought about picking it up, but I haven't.
And I stopped. I don't know why. I just stopped.
Yeah, well, we'll have to. I can track down some of those for you if you need me to.
Oh, I'm good. Yeah.
What?
Oh, huh?
Yeah. Nope.
Okay. Not all right. Either. Anyway, sure. that was interesting.
Are you sure? We don't want to force you into anything here.
No to the Talon.
Okay.
No to the Talon.
Yep. Yeah.
Let's see. Batman and Robin 23.3 talks about Ra's al Ghul. It goes.
Oh, that was boring.
I've always liked that character. I didn't have it because he was in his heyday, was in the 70s, and I missed a lot of that. But basically, it goes back and forth in time and telling little stories, and it's the same kind of deal. The society has shown up, say, hey, you either join with us or we're going to kill you. And it goes back and forth showing things, and basically he kicks the guy that he sent's ass. And, you know, they talk about, remind us that Talia's dead. They bring that in. So he's back. And so.
And what was wrong with this issue, Murray?
It bored me to tears.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, a little bit too showing me. But apparently he's going to show up in Red Hood and the Outlaws, which I dropped right after Death in the Family. I haven't read it in a while.
That was a good choice.
Oh, did it go to hell after that?
I don't like it anymore. It's not fun. It's no fun.
It didn't look like fun. That's why I stopped reading
it. I stopped reading it because the focus all of a sudden became Jason Todd, who was mm-hmm. the least interesting character of the three. So.
Yeah, I have to agree. Now, the next one, the Killer Croc one, I was surprised. It was done by Tim Seeley. Batman and Robin number 23.4, done by Tim Seeley, the horror writer.
Hack slash is Tim Seeley.
Yeah, exactly. And he's written other stuff I've liked, and I didn't know it until after I read it. But so, yeah, it shows his origin.
Art by Francis Portella. Wow.
Yeah, I knew there was something I was forgetting about that. It's really good art. And basically shows his origin and shows that he has pretty much taken up to the sewers and got a following of people that have been abused and left to their own devices, and you know, and he saves them in the sewers, and they're like his followers, and he's got like hundreds of them. And he takes out this whole.
They're doing that with this character over here in Batman because they're doing the same thing with the Green Goblin over in the Superior Spider-Man.
Oh, are they now? But yeah, he takes out a bunch of bad cops that killed the only person that ever was nice to him when he was a kid. So that was interesting.
I'm gonna get that one right now.
Yeah, that one was really good. I was really surprised how good it was.
I didn't know it was Seeley and Patella. That was, okay. I want to take a real quick aside here.
Sure.
A huge error on DC's part, and I've seen this mentioned online many a time since the issue came out, was lack of cover credits.
Oh, absolutely. I agree totally.
Because there are some.
Ow. Oh my god, ow. Sorry.
You alright?
I'm having a Charlie Orr's.
Oh, okay. See, I get those at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're so bad god. They wake you up.
Go ahead.
Continue. Right. No, I've never gotten a while I'm awake Charlie Orr's before.
No, I haven't. I don't think I have either.
Ugh. Okay, I'm better.
Alright. Anyway, what were you
walk
saying?
Walk around the room, do a lap, come on, work it, walk it off, walk it up.
Ugh.
So, man.
Ugh. Okay. Phew.
So where were we?
Talking about the lack of cover credits.
Yeah, the lack of cover credits. I just wanted to mention that because I did not, I probably would have picked this up. Despite the fact that I don't care about Killer Croc, I might have picked it up for Seeley and Portella.
Yeah, I would probably too.
But since I didn't go online and look at the issues, whatever. Okay, well.
All right. Well, that's on you.
Yeah.
That is for me. I'm the schmuck because I didn't use my X-ray vision to look at the credits page in the issue.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it.
Okay.
Let's see. We went through all the Dark Knight ones. Joker's Daughter was crap. Clayface was eh.
Really? I liked Clayface a lot.
I didn't really care for it, but
I liked it.
Who did Clayface?
I don't like Clayface's new look, but I liked the story.
Actually, he looks more like the cartoon. John Layman and Cliff Richards.
Yeah.
He looks more like the cartoon now.
Again, if I had known, I probably would have.
It's John okay. Layman. I mean, you know, that's your each to each his own.
But that Joker's Daughter, why does Anna Senti, I mean, honest to God, fire her now. I no offense, I'm sure she's a sweet human being, mm-hmm. but she just does not deserve to be getting these gigs. Is it because she can write on time? I mean, is that what
it's telling? It might be, you know. That's something I can figure.
And she's willing to put up, apparently, with editorial abuse? I don't...
I don't know. That very well may be a part of it.
Well, really, though, what is she writing now? Katana, that's going.
Yeah.
Good point.
Is that good it?
Point. Well, yeah, and I read that first issue of that, and that was just dumb.
I don't think she's writing much anymore, other than books that are going away.
Well, she might be doing some of her own stuff. I really don't. It seems like I heard her name mentioned with either an Image or a Marvel project, but she was a novelist before that, wasn't she?
She might have been. She had a big career at Marvel for a long time.
Yeah. Okay.
And then maybe went to do novels.
Oh, and she's doing Catwoman right now.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. She's older than I thought. And my God, is she rough looking.
Oh, ouch.
She is. I'm sorry.
Taking a personal shot at her. I don't know, man.
She wrote Kid Eternity back in the 90s.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Catwoman number... she's from number 13 on. She wrote that. She's done stuff off and on for quite a while.
She's done stuff.
She was an editor too for Marvel, it looks like.
And you know what? Some people are meant to be editors. Yeah. Some people are not. Are meant to be the creator.
The Peter J. Tomasi used to be an editor, and when he started writing, I love just about everything I've ever read of his. So there you go.
And I bet if you were to look back at the Marvel books that this woman edited, you'd think, wow, I really enjoyed that.
Well, and it says here on the wiki page for her that she created Marvel characters such as Typhoid Mary, Blackheart, Longshot, Mojo, and Spiral.
Yeah, her run on Daredevil is apparently groundbreaking. I've never read them, but
I never read it either. Huh, well, you know, to each his own.
And the Longshot.
Do your homework. She was probably very attractive when she wrote Daredevil.
She probably was.
Oh.
But she's actually older than me, so I mean, she's.
She's older. What?
She's older than me.
That makes her.
She 1957 is when she was born, according to Wikipedia. So yeah, she's been around for a while. I don't mean it like that. Yeah, she's 56. It's not that old, I guess. Anyway. Before I get any hate mail. Why are you bashing her? It just came out. I don't know what to tell you. Let's see. Detective Comics.
Detective Comics Poison Ivy. That was boring.
Yeah, it was.
Didn't read it.
She just kind of walked around town and just did stuff.
Harley Quinn. I don't think I read it.
Harley Quinn I did. Dave
Kent, how did you not read that, Murray?
If you like Matt Kent, you need to read that. It was interesting, and it's got Burnham did the cover. The art I didn't really care for, but this happens. It starts out when they're having that big meeting at the Justice League Watchtower.
That's always exciting, meetings.
Yeah, so, well, that's what she says. So she goes, yeah, she has no squad, no whatever. So basically it goes through her Okay, you'll like this little. You want me to tell you what the twist is?
Yeah.
Okay, about why she became Harley Quinn?
Tell me. Lay it on me.
So she's a psychiatrist in Gotham, and she wasn't challenged with normal people, so she wanted to go to Arkham. She sees the Joker, and she decides to – the only way she could help him is become like him.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. She plays dumb. And then it shows her doing some – I mean, she's obviously still crazy, but, I mean – she's a lot. They make her. I mean, you think she the way she acts is one thing, but what's going through her head? She's a lot more intelligent than she acts, and they might be setting that up for the new Harley Quinn series.
Well, in her original incarnation, she was a psychiatrist. She was a magna cum laude. I mean, she was a
mm-hmm.
a genius, and then she snapped and she fell in love with Mr. J and.
Mr. J.
But what they're talking about is the reason she's done this is because how orderly her family was.
So she's a Catholic who was beat by nuns and
society. Yeah, so yeah. And at the end of it she meets up with Deadshot.
Who and she they've actually portrayed her pretty cool in the Suicide Squad.
Makes me want to read it now.
She flips back and forth occasionally between mm-hmm. being the dumb blonde and being the smart what is Harlequin, whatever her real last name,
Quinzel or something like that.
Quinzel, that's right. Yeah. It's she's an interesting character. I think that Bruce Timm created a really cool new character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a shame that they had to kind of twist her even more. I thought just the idea that she fell in love with this nut job at the
mm-hmm.
house. I think that was a perfectly fine origin, just like the Mr. Freeze one. There's no need to convolute it.
Mm-hmm. So,
you want to talk boring? You want to talk boring? Detective Comics 23.3, the Scarecrow issue.
Yeah, I know. Whoa. Even Tomasi didn't. Oh, it's just a lot of talking, and a lot of it didn't really make much sense.
It wasn't even a Scarecrow story. It was him going around introducing the different boroughs of Gotham. It was
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Murray.
See, this one I thought, I could go read Arkham War or whatever, and it was kind of a nice little, I don't know, I thought it was a cool little intro maybe to Arkham War.
What, this? Yeah, you can look at it that way.
Like, I kind of liked that it was some world building, that we got to see what was up with Gotham and the various characters. You're right, it's probably not much of a Scarecrow story, but I didn't mind it. I kind of liked it.
Yeah. I like the Scarecrow character. I liked that he was the first villain they fought in the new movie series. I liked that mm-hmm. the recent issues of, I want to say it was Detective, that he was the focus villain.
I don't think the art worked for me. I don't.
No, the art was kind of meh.
I'm not sure that I'm not sure if it's the Scarecrow's new look or this artist's interpretation of the Scarecrow's new look, but I didn't love that part of it. But I thought the story was cool enough.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Let's see.
I wanted to read that one. How did I not read it? Maybe I did read it and I forgot it. Was it
terrible? Yeah, it was. I didn't really care for it.
And you're right, Murray. It would almost work as a companion book to that Bane one shot into the Arkham War story. I can see that.
Yeah, some of these are. That's what they're doing. They're you know building up to whatever. I don't know. This they kind of changed the origin of Man Bat a little bit, which I don't remember too much about it because that was in the 70s and I was young. So. He starts out trying to be a good guy and ends up being a bad guy. So
was he really though? I don't think so. He was just like a Hulk more.
Well, he was like a vigilante, but yeah.
No, but he was the Hulk. You're right. He was more the Hulk.
He was. Mm-hmm. He was. You know, he batted out and he couldn't control himself. But then eventually he could, because he was in Batman Family and he got his own feature and he still had a wife and stuff. So
yeah,
I like what they've done recently in that he's actually. kind of is a good guy, but his wife is the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, that was interesting. Okay.
Nearly missed that issue because I didn't see that.
It's interesting twist, and then she takes the man bat serum, but decides to go off and start killing people, and he thinks it's him. Of course, it's that whole, oh, I can't control myself. Things are happening. I'm going unconscious and I'm killing people. But it turns out it's not him. It's her.
It's her.
It's not me. It's you.
It's not me. It's you. That's right. Yes.
All right. We'll finish out the Batman sort of ones, the Batman Superman number 3.1, and then we can call it good, I think, sure, for man. This one.
Was that the Doomsday ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greg Pak and Brett Booth, good stuff. I thought. Did you read it?
I don't think I did.
Well, basically, it shows Krypton again before the fall.
Can I just say, it blew up 5
yeah.
years ago.
Well,
parents.
Okay. It's got some little tidbits. It shows that. Jor-El's wife, Lara, was in the military. And it showed, okay, they talk about Doomsday. Well, this is where they pretty much, like I said, that creature that Zod made is basically a hybrid of a Kryptonian and those Char. And they, you know, they actually make it look like Doomsday in this one. And it just shows him, you know, Zod coming in, and they just change it that little bit. But at the end, this is the one I was telling you about where Zod's talking to little Kara when she's in, you know, through the Phantom Zone, and they actually bring out the story. You should know our doom, and it's actually got the Superman symbol with blood coming off of it, just like the cover when Superman died. And it's like they recount the story of Superman 75 from whatever. It's kind of interesting how that happens. I'm not sure about that. It even shows Power Girl, the Cyborg Superman, Supergirl, the Superboy, and Steel there. That was a fantasy. Anyway.
So it actually shows that he did, in fact, kill Superman at one point.
Yeah, they've said that before, but I think this is like a fictionalized account because, you know, I don't know.
It's all fiction.
Yeah, well, I know, but you know what I mean.
It's all a story.
So it's like in this issue that she sent, you know, well, yeah. So, yeah, Zod's like talking to her through this little portal thing. And Doomsday is in the Phantom Zone. So.
Well, not for long, because he's out in Superman Wonder Woman.
Is he? Okay.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway. Well, I haven't read that one. I wonder if you didn't like it. I know you didn't like it, Caleb.
I did not.
Really?
Cross my heart.
I like it.
All right. Well, I think we've covered a good chunk.
Yes. Well, given that more than half the books were Batman-related books anyhow.
Yeah, I know. They probably wouldn't have talked about them as much if I didn't like Batman so much.
I mean, you know, to kind of get ahead of ourselves here a little bit, overall, this is a good idea. I think, reflecting back, listening to older episodes of our show here, that I was not, I did not think it was going to work out. It actually did. I mean, the ones that further the story of Forever Evil are or the ongoing so far have been really good. The ones that are just origin stories, not so much.
Well, and if nothing else, it bought them another month, right, to get ahead on the rest of their books. Because most of these were written by or illustrated by folks that are not on a regular series, right? Well, it's written, not written. They've all been written by, for the most part, people on series, but illustrated anyway by newcomers or new to DCers or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean the Aquaman ones were not drawn by Pelletier, who does the monthly, and they were only plotted by Geoff Johns.
That's right, co-plotted even.
Yeah, and there's only one Batman book written by the regular writer. Actually, he co-writes it, which is the you know the Riddler one.
Yeah. Bless you, sir.
Sorry about that. So yeah, I mean it gave, you're absolutely right. It gave him an opportunity to kind of get ahead.
I think that was kind of what happened with the Zero issues too, wasn't it?
Maybe that's what September is.
Recovery.
September is there.
I figured this would be, if they're September, that means that they were probably done in July, which would have been all the main guys would have been off in San Diego. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. True. Well, I think that wraps it up. You guys got anything else?
Hey, Murray, welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back, man.
I'm back. Yeah.
Welcome back.
I got nothing either.
I think I've burned myself out of reading comics because I started like at 10 or 9 and read everything up to the E. Well, actually, I'm on the G's. I finished all the Green Lantern ones. So I might have to go watch some TV now.
You mean you sat through Dial? You actually sat through reading Dial H for or Dial E for? Like,
I haven't got that far.
Sorry,
I haven't got that far.
Okay, next week.
Yeah,
that's his J book.
Yeah, I heard that one was bad.
You might think all right, it's a
I'm done.
Book.
It's bad.
But really, J.
All right then. As you, always, you can email us at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com. Or you can check us out on our Facebook page, Tales from the Long Box Podcast. Just do a little search. Or you can comment on the actual episodes, which would be nice for a change. Or maybe even on iTunes. You know, come and tell us what you think. Yeah. You know, I know at least two or three of you are out there that listen. So, but anyway, that's about it. That's it for this week. And we're out.